from Springfield. This is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Deaths of 13 residents at a veterans home in downstate Quincy is dominating the race for governor today. A WBEZ radio investigation reveals outbreaks of Legionnaires' disease have hit the vet's home there three times since 2015.
When's it going to stop? You know, how many more people are going to have to die before they can get to the bottom of what's causing it?
If their dad got shot down over enemy lines, if their dad was 13 months being kicked and starved and beaten, come home, picked himself up, worked his butt off till he retired, and then have something like this happen, asking how they would feel. What would they want?
I will say to you that I still believe that our water is as clean as it can possibly be. And I do think that our water is probably the cleanest water in the state, without hesitation.
Democratic candidate for Governor J.B. Pritzker is calling for an independent investigation,
so that we know exactly where the failures have been.
What we have now, lurching from year to year, is a situation that is embarrassing, and it's an insult to these veterans and their families.
There's fallout from an investigation into deaths at a state-run veterans home, this one in Quincy. We're going to talk about that and more on State Week. In Springfield, I'm Sean Crawford, and our panel today includes Charlie Wheeler. Charlie is director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. We also have in our State House studio Brian Mackey, Illinois Public Radio's State House reporter. And joining us from Chicago today, Dave McKinney, a reporter for public station WBEZ and one of the reporters who've been on this investigation. Dave, thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Sean.
And Dave, let me just go right to you. I guess, how did the idea for this come about? We've been hearing, I know, for a few years now about Legionnaires and the problems that have been going on and deaths linked to that at the Quincy Veterans Home. What prompted this investigation by WBEZ?
Well, I mean, I think it started with the fact that we sort of stumbled upon the fact that there were these cases in front of the State Court of Claims. I mean, it's an obscure kind of branch of the, it's not even the judiciary, it's overseen by the Secretary of State's office. And it exists when something wrong happens in a state institution or facility and there's possible negligence, that's where people go to sue the state. And so we stumbled upon all of these cases. There are 11 cases of family members of some of these victims over at the Quincy Veterans Home, and none of their stories have been told. And as we kind of bore into it, these stories were quite dramatic, stories of people who, you know, really were heroes during World War II and Korea and survived those ordeals, came back and lived for a long time and were very happy and proud to be going into a state veterans home. And then in the span of, you know, in some cases, no more than a week, they get this bug and they die. And in many cases, were treated with just merely Tylenol instead of antibiotics that often will kick this Legionella bug.
Take us back, Dave, to when this outbreak first began, and there were several cases, propping up here. We were hearing about them in the media. The response from the state, from the Department of Veterans Affairs, was that they were taking care of the issue. Go back to that and tell us what has taken place and has it solved the problem?
Well, what we know, the first acknowledgement by the state of Illinois that there were problems at the Quincy home, which it's the state's largest veterans home, and there are slightly under 400 veterans and their spouses who reside there. The state made a formal acknowledgement of Legionnaires at that facility in late August. And what was clear as we started digging here, there were known cases prior to that during the month of July in 2015. There were five cases before people, some of the people we focused in on were even diagnosed. And so there was some knowledge at the facility that these cases were there. And so over the span of 2 or 3 weeks, we had a dozen people die. You know, who were in their 80s and early to mid-90s there. And in a lot of cases, certainly in the cases we examined, these were people who were still, you know, pretty vibrant. I mean, certainly some did have underlying health problems. But, you know, one of the women that was profiled here, I mean, her main malady was deafness, and she was in her late 70s. And probably one of the more kind of gut-wrenching cases we stumbled upon, a case where, you know, her son had helped put her and her husband in that facility during the month of July in 2015. And when word hits that there's Legionnaires there, he picks up the phone, calls the facility and says, "Can you check on my mom?" And they say, "You know, if you haven't heard from us, she's okay." And then the next day they get a call from the home saying, "We want permission to go into her apartment. We think her friends have said she's missing." And then within short order, they learn from the coroner that she had been dead in her apartment for at least a couple of days. And it just, you know, these families really have not had a venue to tell their stories yet. And that's what's so dramatic about this. These people feel like most of these deaths were wholly preventable, and they lay it at the state's feet. Fast forward to 2016, there are five more cases after, you know, a big effort is made at the facility to clean it up. They've changed made significant upgrades to the water system there. The protocols they've changed in terms of treating people who display symptoms of Legionnaires, and yet five more people are sickened during the summer of 16. The governor pays a visit to the facility at that point, you know, basically to kind of give an update on things, and says that he, you know, I think the quote that he said then, "We're really on top of the situation." And then you fast forward to this year, and during the month of October and early November, there were three more cases and another fatality involving a gentleman who was a Korean War veteran from DuPage County. And so the problem has not gone away over three successive years, and it's posed a lot of questions to how the administration dealt with this on the front end and why the problem won't go away.
And Brian, this has now developed, of course, here as we head into an election cycle here, into a campaign issue.
Yeah, I think it probably just took a few hours for the various gubernatorial campaigns to start putting out statements. You had Republican State Representative Jeannie Ives criticizing Governor Rauner's leadership and competence on this, and then same thing on the Democratic side, either putting out press statements, or J.B. Pritzker actually put together a little television news conference in downtown Chicago to call for investigations. You know, and that's what you expect when you have a story that makes as big a sort of shockwaves in the political system as this one has. People want to get out there in front of it. They want to, you know, be associated with calling for reforms and saying that there ought to be investigations.
Well, sure, and certainly investigations seem to be warranted here. Charlie, do you think that the governor, does he deserve some of the blame that he's getting from some of these other opponents?
Well, I guess if you take the governor at his word, no, because he's not in charge. It's Mike Madigan's fault. I think a more reasoned approach would be, if you're the governor of the state, yes, you are in charge of the executive branch, with the exception of independently elected offices like the Secretary of State or the Attorney General. You should have been on top of this. One of the things that struck me about the story was that apparently there was a time lag between Legionnaires' first diagnosis and contacting the Federal Centers for Disease Control, who would be the experts that you would go to and say, "What do we need to do? How can we handle this?" It's the kind of thing that you're the governor. Yeah, you're the guy who's responsible. Other governors who had bad things happen during their time have accepted responsibility. So I think it's only fair that Governor Rauner take the blame for it.
And Dave, certainly the governor, as you mentioned, came to Quincy at one point and said, "Hey, we're on top of it." He sort of took ownership.
Well, he took ownership during, as you point out, 2016. We tried multiple times to get Governor Rauner to respond to our article in person, and we had no luck in getting an interview with him. His schedule since the story was published has been kind of a succession of small cities downstate where the media markets are you know, not really pursuing this that aggressively. So at some point, he will have to answer questions about it, certainly in this, you know, hot, turbocharged political environment we're in.
Well, what I would like to try to figure out here is it seems as though from what the response has been from the state to the story has been that they have done work there, that they have worked with federal officials to try to make sure that the water is clean, the water doesn't carry the Legionella bacteria. Does it seem as though they have done all of those things from your reporting? Have you been able to determine if they've done everything they could do to try to clean things up?
Well, the Centers for Disease Control during these multiple cases, particularly the most recent report that they issued in June of 17, you know, they have praised some of the steps that the state has taken. I mean, these water changes they've made that have cost about close to $7 million, a little over $6.8 million, plus the changes in treatment of people. They're not waiting necessarily on test results to come back if somebody displays a fever to start an antibiotic treatment. They get praise for that. But at the same time, and even the state Veteran Affairs Director, Erica Jeffries, acknowledges that the plumbing system at this facility that opened in 1886 is suspect. The CDC said that the plumbing there, galvanized pipes that are over 100 years old, are a persistent source for some of this material. And there's almost sort of a whack-a-mole kind of, and I don't mean to make light of that, but almost a very kind of unpredictable way in which this bacteria that causes Legionnaires pops up. I mean, in 2016, one of the people who developed Legionnaires' disease was a volunteer who worked in the kitchen, and this person's job was to clean dishes in the mess hall. And so the nozzle sprayer that was being used to clean these dishes was determined to be a source for Legionella, and it had been tested on a couple of prior occasions and came back negative. But what Director Jeffries told us, by her estimate, there are miles and miles and miles and miles of this galvanized piping that would just be cost prohibitive to pull up. And so they believe that they're taking steps to do, flushing of the system and all these filters that they put change out on a monthly basis on shower heads and sink faucets and the like. That's what she said. That's the basis for her saying that she believes the water there is the most clean in the state of Illinois. But of course, that's a difficult claim to make when you have people, in this case, a person from DuPage County who died in early November from this.
And Brian, this is not certainly going away. The legislature now has decided that I believe there's going to be some hearings that take place maybe as soon as next month. So this is going to be an issue that legislators want to hear more about. Certainly they're concerned about this as well.
Yeah, I mean, this is, like I said, it's obviously a human tragedy, but, politicians respond to things through the channels they have available. So you can certainly expect that there are going to be legislative hearings. And, because this is something where we're going into an election year, you can bet that people are going to continue trying to make an election year issue out of this. Who can you point fingers to? We've talked a little bit earlier about this question of, what did the governor know? Has he taken responsibility? Dave pointed out that he did not respond to or did not at least grant interview requests that they made. Some of the other questions I've seen raised is, was the administration responding to this as a public health crisis or is more of a public relations crisis? Those are things that people are going to want to have answers to.
Dave, where does it go from here? Well, you mentioned the court of claims that these families are suing, several of them are suing. What's the next step in that whole process?
Well, I mean, these cases still need to go in front of a hearing officer and be heard. The Attorney General's office is representing the Department of Veteran Affairs in these cases. Under the State Court of Claims Act, there is a cap on how much these families can get. I mean, it's at $100,000 for if negligence is proven, that's the cap. And what some of the families said, I mean, uniformly, they said they're not in this for the money. $100,000, in some cases split among multiple siblings is nothing. But what they're more after is just, they want to see this problem fixed. And some people have expressed disappointment about why that $100,000 cap exists, because they point out if each one of these cases could result in a multi-million dollar payout, as is the case, we found court records in other Legionnaires cases. There was a big outbreak at the Marriott in Chicago a few years ago that, one of the cases paid over $2 million. If there were payouts or the threat of them at that level, you can guarantee that the state would have paid much closer interest to what was going on over there if, suddenly you were looking at a collective $20 or $30 million payout.
I think one of the differences that unless I'm mistaken, and obviously I'm not a lawyer, I don't think you can sue the state per se. And the Court of Claims is set up to handle those kinds of suits or those kinds of monetary awards that in other circumstances, were it not the state, were it a private individual or corporation, there would be a lawsuit for damages. One of the questions that occurs to me, Dave, has anyone suggested that maybe the smart thing to do would be to try and find somewhere else for these folks to live?
Well, at the start of the show, we heard a clip from Senator Durbin. I mean, Durbin is making that case. Until it can be proven safe that there are no more tests showing positive results for Legionella, that those veterans over there need to be moved out somewhere else. But, of course, that opens up another can of worms, basically, of where do these people go? A lot of people go there because it's an affordable way for these veterans that have served the country to get skilled nursing care. Some of the families had contemplated private nursing homes, and if you're talking about a couple, you could be draining their assets at maybe $10,000 a month in a private nursing home. Here, they weren't facing that.
Well, what I would suggest is that no, it's not going to be their assets. That we, the state of Illinois, the people of the state of Illinois, owe it to these folks to make sure they're in a safe environment, and that we foot the bill for it.
Yeah, I mean, Senator Durbin has certainly made that call. The families in Quincy that we talked to are pretty adamant. They don't want to see this facility shut down because it's a big employer in Quincy, and Quincy has had, like many, many cities in the state of Illinois, has had its share of hard times. So they want to see the place continue to stay open. They want to see those jobs remain, but they want the problem fixed. And, a friend of the show that has been on many times and is now working for the Post-Dispatch, Kurt Erickson, has been following in the state of Missouri a very similar situation. It didn't involve Legionella, but it involved neglect and mistreatment at a state-run veterans facility there. And just, this past week, the governor of that state pushed for the resignation of the state veteran affairs director over there because of it. So I don't think that we're by any means finished with seeing reaction to this.
And we do have other veterans' homes in the state of Illinois. There's been no indication of this problem, the Legionnaire's disease, at any of those facilities.
Well, certainly not at the level that we have seen here. This outbreak is unusual, and we talked to public health experts, water safety experts that are nationally recognized, and they point out that while Legionella is common, I mean, one person told us that it's a bacteria that's natural in the environment. You might find it in 50% of the places that you're at. But in most cases, once it's found, it's pretty easily eradicated through, chlorine and through, high heat, supercharged heated water, things like that. And what's unusual is for it to come back multiple times over successive years here, and that's very troubling.
I would just add that, Rich Miller on his Capital Facts blog also linked back, reminded us about a Chicago Tribune story from 2015 that there was a Legionnaire's case at Stateville Correctional Center. So this is not something that, is unique just to this facility. But in that case, it was one person. And as far as we know, there have not been at least additional reports of cases. So, interesting questions to explore about why, it can be contained in some cases. But as Dave said, it's a strange to come back again and again at this facility.
Well, and one thing that occurred to me when I saw that mentioned about Stateville is that the folks who are in Stateville are in a lot better health, I'm guessing, than the people who are in the veterans nursing home.
Younger in most cases.
Yeah.
These people, after interviewing these families, the way they described them, you might have an example of someone going into the home because they had a urinary problem of some sort. I mean, it's not a debilitating kind of problem, but it needs a skilled nursing kind of set, But somebody who's otherwise mobile and coherent and certainly got life left to live, and they get fever, and then they're is a recognition at this facility that this problem exists. These families just cannot get their arms around how the home knew, the state knew that there were problems there and didn't let these families know. They didn't let anybody know until the epidemic had really kind of taken full bloom and began killing people. And the thing is, if Legionnaire's disease, as ominous as it sounds, if it's diagnosed and if it's treated early, people can survive it. Antibiotics typically will knock it out. And in this case, you had people who were just getting Tylenol until it was way too late, until they were just days away from dying. And there was a narrative in one of these cases about the World War II veteran who, Melvin Tucker, he survived his plane crashing during World War II. He was a tail gunner on a B-17 bomber over Nazi Germany. And the plane got, in a big air battle with the German Air Force and was shot down. The plane is spiraling down. He's the only survivor on the plane, and he doesn't even know how to work the parachute. And so he just jumps out, hopes it works. It does inflate finally, and then he lands. And then promptly he starts getting shot at and then captured. And then for the next 13 months is a POW at one of Germany's most notorious and abusive prison camps. And he survives that. Then you fast forward 70 years, and while this guy is still, he's 94 years old. Certainly, he's near the end of his life anyway. But he's still got a sound sense of mind. Can think straight, and his family is checking in on him regularly, and he can't survive this. And the family is just these stories were just heartbreaking to hear. People like, had we only known that when these fevers began that there was a problem, we could have pushed harder to get them tested, or we could have saw that they got antibiotics, or we could have taken them out. And that wasn't afforded the families of these 12 victims that died there in August and September of 2015.
If you haven't read the reporting by Dave McKinney and Tony Arnold by WBEZ, you should go read that. It's available now on the Quincy Veterans Home, the Legionnaires outbreak there that has occurred. Let me move on. Something else happened this week. Pat Quinn was a winner in the election lottery. And I point out that case, Brian, because we've talked before about how much does it matter when these lotteries are held for ballot placement, whose name goes first in a specific race or who goes last. Does it matter that much? In a race like attorney general with a lot of people who may not have statewide recognition, a former governor, that might matter.
It might, the evidence is that typically this sort of name ranking doesn't matter except on the very lowest, offices, so if you're running for governor, most of the people will have heard of at least, one of the candidates and might, be able to vote on that. We're talking more state rep or even county official or judge where the sort of placement matters for a couple of percentage points. But Pat Quinn, certainly he's, somebody pointed out recently, has been on, I think, just about every statewide election in one form or another since the 90s. I mean, he was state treasurer back then ran for, of course, was lieutenant governor under Rod Blagojevich, ran for governor himself in 2010 and 2014, and here he is again in 2018, going to be the name listed first in a very crowded Democratic primary running for attorney general. So one has to think that, that will jump out to some people. Of course, it could be a negative, too, in some cases. There were a lot of people who last time around said that they were voting. We've heard anecdotally from people who's, just said they couldn't support Pat Quinn because of his position on firearms, for example, or his position on state employee pensions. He, said he was put on this earth to change the state pension system. So that did cost him a lot of union support that might traditionally go to the Democratic candidate. So it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. But for those of us who cover government all the time and thought we might have heard the last of Pat Quinn in public life when he unveiled his portrait here about a year ago, apparently not.
And surely you thought that maybe there may be some people who vote for Pat Quinn and may have voted for Bruce Rauner even last time, but may come back and vote for Pat Quinn this time.
Yeah, that occurred to me because, again, this is anecdotally, but I've had people come up to me and express regrets for having voted for Rauner because he was not Pat Quinn, rather than Rauner because of what he was talking about. And a lot of it had to do, as Brian indicated, with Quinn's effort to cut back pension benefits for retirees, not just state employees, but university employees, like all of us except Dave, and probably more significantly for public school teachers across the state. And so the question would be, now the folks who voted for Bruce Rauner and have realized that Bruce Rauner is probably more opposed to organized labor than Pat Quinn ever was, will they feel a guilty conscience and decide, well, here's my chance to make amends, I'll vote for Quinn for attorney general? Who knows? I mean, yeah, Pat Quinn does go back a long, long ways. He was an operative for Dan Walker, which was darn near 50 years ago.
You know, the thing that that could work in Quinn's advantage here on this is that there is such a wide open field. I mean, right now there are 8 people who filed nominating petitions to get on the ballot. 2 of those cases have objections pending against them, so I guess the field could shrink to 6. But still, you have somebody in a very crowded field with name recognition. Even if he's developed enemies, it could really work to his advantage by having so many people in that field.
I do want to save a bit of time here. Brian, we talked about this last week, but we're asking for some listeners to weigh in, and if they have some questions for the panel, some things they'd like to have us talk about here on our year-end wrap-up show to get with us. Why don't you give them some details on that?
Yeah, we want to do this Q&A segment, and ideally we'd like the questions to come from you in your own voice, you in the State Week community. I mean, not you, Sean. there are 2 ways you can get in touch. You can call and leave us a voicemail, or if you have a smartphone, send us a voice memo. We have instructions for that, the phone number, the email address where to send the voice memo, or like I said, if you just want to call and leave a voicemail, we've had people do that. There's a phone number. It's all up on our website. Which is stateweek.org. That's stateweek.org. We hope to hear from you soon.
And now it's time for our notes from the field. Charlie?
Well, one of the things that happened this past week was that Governor Rauner signed a piece of legislation that is intended to cut down on fraudulent opioid prescriptions. And what it will do, it's effective January 1st, require the State Department of Human Services to have a database of all opioid prescriptions. So if a doctor goes to prescribe one to a patient, the doctor can check and see, has this patient had previous opioid prescriptions from some other doctor? And the idea is to cut down the fraudulent fact of people going to multiple doctors, getting multiple prescriptions for the same thing.
And Brian Mackey?
Yeah, unfortunately, state of Illinois has earned another bad ranking for its underfunded pension systems, which we were just talking about a moment ago in the context of former Governor Pat Quinn. Fitch Ratings, one of the big rating agencies, says Illinois is ranked 50th out of the 50 states for the size of the pension liability relative to how much people earn. The math is a little confusing to convey over the radio, but basically that figure in Illinois is 23%, the amount of pension liability we have versus our total earnings in the state. To put that in context, the state at the opposite end of the rankings, number one is Florida. Instead of the 23% we are in Illinois, Florida has 1%.
Well, that will do it for this week. Members of our broadcast included Charlie Wheeler, Brian Mackey, and Dave McKinney with WBEZ. You can get a podcast of our show at nprillinois.org and also find us on NPR One. The production assistance for the program today provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capitol by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.